Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Claimed by Ava Quinn, narrated by Isabel Turner and Jay Alder. Chapter 1. Sarah. I twirl a hot pink umbrella into an oversized margarita. It's not really my drink of choice. I'd rather something fruitier. But the group of guys at the far end of the bar ordered a round for the table. Usually I'd turn down free drinks, as they're never really free. But to go along with Margot, I'll at least hold one. She's desperate for a last-minute connection before she heads back into the reality of her real life. Truthfully, I'd be right there with her if I hadn't turned over this new leaf. 2 solid weeks of minding my own damn business, only worrying about me. That has to be a record. Margot stands from the bar stool, her legs wobbly as she waves toward the men, calling them over. This is our last night on the island, and I know she's desperate to make a connection with someone. But I'd rather just head up early and start trying to figure out how I'm going to manage life when we get back to San Francisco.
What are you doing? I gasp. Not yet. We have to nothing, Sarah, Margot says, situating her breasts higher in her dress. This is our last night here. We're going to live it up. I rest my head in my palm and squeeze my eyes shut. Hearing the words out loud makes the reality of the situation more dire. Our last night here. If only the real life waiting back in California weren't so impossibly difficult, I may not be as depressed about leaving paradise. But then again, who knows? Maybe leaving crystal clear water and false reality would always be depressing.
Hey,
the surfer dude from the back table says. He's tall, with light brown hair and blue eyes, tattoos streaked up and down his arms.
You two mind if we sit?
He gestures back toward his 2 friends, a tall, bearded guy who's built like a tank, and another darker-featured guy who's just as muscular but less rugged-looking. Margot doesn't hesitate.
No, of course not. Sit, she says. I'm Margot, and this is Sarah.
I roll my eyes and twist the umbrella in my drink again. The surfer dude smiles and holds out his large hand for a shake.
I'm Brad. These are my buddies, Zane and Colin.
The other guys nod hello, and everyone sits at our table, bottles in hand.
So, where are you girls here from?
Colin asks, taking a swig of his beer. He's the one that looks like he's been lifting since he was 8, and I can barely take my eyes off him. Trust me, I'm trying.
We're from San Francisco, Market Street, Margot says.
I nudge her in the rib and throw her a wide-eyed stare, hoping she gets the message to shut her trap. My mother wasn't much help growing up, but one thing I learned was to be cautious of random men in bars. You don't want to end up like Aunt Jenny, she'd say, pulling another drag of a cigarette. Aunt Jenny trusted a random barfly one time in a strange place in Oklahoma, and she ended up locked in someone's basement for 16 months. She was lucky to get out alive. My mother has carried a gun with her ever since, though the story never actually kept her out of the bar, which would have been most advantageous for the both of us. I try not to be bitter about it. I only wish she'd found a conclusion where she stayed home with me more growing up. Maybe came to a few science fairs. Hell, I'd even settle for being home for dinner a few nights a week. Instead, Mom made her way to the bar, safe with her weapon of choice, while I made myself boxed mac and cheese and watched reruns of Golden Girls. I actually learned quite a bit from those women. Looking good is imperative to success. No topic is ever too taboo, and cheesecake solves most everything. Though cheesecake is still a treat I've never had. It was way too expensive for my mother to have ever brought into the house. And since I left home, I use all my extra income to pay for school. Until this trip, at least.
San Francisco, Brad says. You're a long way from home. Girls trip?
I nod.
It was, but one of our friends ditched for an unexpected jaunt with her boyfriend.
Two is better than one, Brad says before taking in a mouthful of beer.
I'll admit, he is pretty cute. All these men are, but I still keep Aunt Jenny's story close to my mind. What about you guys? I ask. Where are you from?
Miami,
Zane says. His tone is deeper and more reserved than the other men, and I get the feeling he's been dragged over to our table by his friends. Nice, I manage. I've never been there, but I've always wanted to. That's where Lexi, our other friend, that's where her boyfriend is from. Zane nods and looks away, gripping the long neck of his bottle to take another sip. Okay, maybe I could see him sweeping me away to the depths of a concrete cave.
Anyway, Brad says with a breath of fresh energy, we were going to take a walk on the beach after this. You ladies want to join?
Margot looks toward me quickly, not waiting for an answer before she nods.
We'd love that. Right, Sarah?
I wouldn't mind a walk on the beach. I think we were going to take one anyway, but her eagerness has my skin crawling. I know she's desperate for a last-minute fling, and honestly, I don't blame her. If I were running home to an arranged marriage, I'd feel the same way.
Cool, Brad says. We can take you guys to this beach bar called Buddha's Shade on the north side of the island. It's pretty this time of night with all the torches lit.
That's great, I say, trying to sound as genuine as possible with a fake grin plastered on my face. Sure, these guys are hot, but I'm on a 12-step program to get my life right again, and being this close to attractive men makes me want to do things that aren't in my future plan. I suck in a deep breath and filter it through my lungs slowly, reminding myself that sex doesn't solve anything. It's not going to straighten my issues back home, and it's definitely not going to fix my current problem, which I haven't even told Margot and Lexi about. Not to mention, I've been conditioned to believe that intimacy and emotion equal sex. And when intimacy is something you've craved since childhood, sex becomes a scapegoat. At least that's what my therapist told me. I probably should have kept up with our sessions, but I couldn't afford her. When my lungs have emptied, I drag in another breath, taking in the hibiscus in the air. It's soft and sweet, almost like berries, but there's more. Behind it is the scent of something expensive, a musky, woodsy cologne that sets my clit to throb. I push the knee-jerk reaction away and stare into the bar, scanning the bottles for labels that look unique enough to draw my mind into another place. But it's hard to see in the dimly lit space. The sun went down hours ago, and while there are a few torches lit and a few overhead fans shining light around the bartender, it's not enough to see much detail. That hasn't stopped people from being out, though. There are at least 50 people in the small hut drinking. Their voices are a combination of drunken laughter and sarcastic chatter, which has only gotten louder in the last few minutes. One bit of laughter in particular draws my eye to the woodblock overhang where a man sits hunched over with a short glass of dark liquor buried in his paw. He's laughing at a joke the pretty bartender seems to be telling the group of men she's serving to. My stomach clenches and I feel lightheaded. I've seen that man before, and there's absolutely no reason he should be here. In fact, I know he has board meetings this week he shouldn't have missed. I shake my head and run my hands through my hair, pulling a nearby glass of water to my lips as I try to figure out what the hell is happening. I'm imagining it. The island is littered with silver-haired men, a lot of them. But as the man raises his stout, amber-filled glass to his lips, the dim light catches a glinting off his belly tanker bronze watch. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that it's him. It's Kemp. He was the reason I tore out of San Francisco with the little bit of money I had.
Everything okay?
Brad asks, noticing how I've affixed my eyes ahead.
You know that guy?
I look back at Brad, my eyes wide, my heart thumping hard against my chest as I think back to my last interaction with the man at the bar and his large, heaving body bent over me as he leaned me into his desk and gripped my jaw hard.
That's him. It's Kemp, I stutter, probably making zero sense. I need to get out of here.
Chapter 2. Brad. I look around the bar and fixate on the man that Sarah's now trying to avoid. Apparently his name is Kemp, but I can't gather why he'd be a threat. He's older and seemingly innocuous. I guess he's in his late 40s, maybe early 50s, and he carries himself as though he has old money, the kind that's been handed to you over the ages. Though when he twists to the side and flashes his bright white teeth to a woman at the bar, I get the feeling he's some kind of doctor, like one of the ones you'd see in some high-end office by the beach in Miami, giving girls that don't need boob jobs boob jobs.
I need to get out now, Sarah says, her hands cupped around her face, her eyes wide. I try to imagine what's gotten her so worked up, but only weird scenarios come to mind, like how maybe she's tied to the mafia or this man is the paparazzi and he's digging up dirt. Sarah is quite beautiful, and I'd totally believe it if she told me she was a celebrity.
You both want to get out of here? I ask, trying to interject Margot, who's in the middle of a full-fledged dissertation on single versus double-hulled catamarans and which one is better for deep-sea diving. I glance back at Sarah, her big honey-brown eyes now dripping tears, her lip quivering. What the hell is going on? She stands from the table and her legs wobble. I rule out the idea that she's a celebrity. I have a feeling that would have been more a hide-and-run sort of reaction. This seems more scared and angry. Maybe it is the mafia. Either way, I can't let her run off alone. Moving to her side, I grip her waist, helping to steady her as she stumbles out of the bar. It's not a heavy stumble, as though she's drunk. It's more a holy fuck, there's a mafia man following me kind of walk. Maybe I've seen too many Robert De Niro movies for my own good.
Where are you guys headed?
Colin asks, standing with me. I look towards Sarah and gauge her expression. I'm not sure what she wants me to say, so I let her take the lead.
I just need some air,
she says, a quiver in her voice.
We'll be back in a second.
Colin eyes me as though he wants an out away from chatty Margot, but I beg him with widened eyes to give me a minute. He relents and sits back on the stool, crossing his arms in hesitation to Margot's long-winded thesis as my attention goes back to Sarah, who's wiping away her tears with speed as they drip down her face in quick succession. Damn, it's been a while since I've seen anyone cry this hard. It's sort of hard to watch.
So, who is that guy?
I ask as we step outside the tiki hut. She lets out a sigh and wraps her arms around her body, trying to keep herself from shaking. For a second, I let her do it alone, but it only takes a moment for me to reach out and wrap her as well. It's instinct more than anything, and really very selfish, as my own chest was getting tight watching her suffer. Are you in some kind of trouble? I ask, holding her in place as the shaking begins to subside. She shakes her head, then steps away from me and down onto the sand, tucking behind a green grape bush.
It's just, he's a guy I know from back home. I wasn't expecting to see him here.
I nod and lower myself onto the sand next to her, reaching my hand behind her back.
Is it okay if I...
She glances toward me and nods, wiping another tear. If she doesn't want to tell me who this guy is, that's okay. I can just hold her here until she feels better. In the near silent rush of waves crashing against the sand, a warm breeze pushes past us, and a hint of whatever floral perfume she's wearing surrounds us. Then again, maybe it's honeysuckle. I'm not sure, but it's something sweet.
Thanks for coming out here with me, she says. Sorry, I...
I have this rule about apologies, I say,
sweeping her hair from my vision as another light breeze passes. Never apologize for taking care of yourself. She smiles softly and sits up straighter, holding her pretty pink dress down from the fluttering wind.
So, what are you guys doing down here anyway? You got our spiel. What's yours?
I can see she's desperate to change the subject, so I go with the flow. You wouldn't believe me if I told you, I say, looking out at the ocean. I know it's there because I can hear it, but the only bit of light is coming from the bar on this section of the beach, which leaves the water just nearly shadows.
Okay, I'll bite,
she says, pulling on the lobe of her ear.
What wouldn't I believe?
I contemplate telling her every detail of our trip, just so she'll trust me, but I think Zane would lose it. He's been playing everything close to the belt since we left Miami. A trust-no-one kind of deal that's growing old fast. He's been that way for as long as I've known him, but it seems worse lately.
You ran away,
a voice says from behind us.
What are you two doing out here?
I turn toward the woman, and though there isn't much light, I can tell it's Margot. Somehow the bright yellow dress she's wearing cuts through the darkness.
Hey,
Sarah says with sympathy, as though she owes an explanation she doesn't actually owe.
Sorry, we were just getting some fresh air. I was feeling a little queasy.
Interesting. Whatever's going on with that guy at the bar, her friend doesn't know much about it either. There is the lack of that special eyeball stare friends give when they're speaking in code. Margot smiles rather obliviously and stumbles over to the empty space beside Sarah, throwing herself onto the sand next to her. She's beautiful in a bubbly, sweet sort of way, with light hair and eyes and a big freckle on her left breast just below her collarbone, but she's nowhere near as beautiful as Sarah. I hate that I notice appearance so easily. I know it tells very little about a person, but it's something I've been trained to do. Note scars, crooked noses, the exact shade of a person's hair, the way they carry themselves. It's a byproduct of the military work I spent my early 20s doing. It seeps into your bones and takes over everything you are. Hell, I'd still be out in the field if it weren't for the knee injury that left me with a limp. Zane steps into the dim light and makes eye contact with me before nodding his head away from the girls. I assume he's asking to talk privately, but I can't imagine what he wants to talk about. Though, I guess by the serious look in his eye, he's over the little socialization experiment we've been having. Standing from the sand, I leave Sarah with Margot and make my way toward the guys who've gathered 10 feet away. What's up? I ask, folding my arms over one another. I don't want them to bail on me for the night. I want to get to know Sarah more, but I doubt she'll leave her friend for more than a few minutes. And if the guys go back to the hotel, Margot will have no one to talk to. We have an early morning tomorrow, Zane says, his arms crossed in front of his chest, his stance wide. We should get going. That producer wasn't messing around when she said 4 a.m. Do you really think we should be doing this TV show thing anyway? It's weird. And if we don't win the $1 million, we'll be committed into some embarrassment hall of fame for eternity. We'll never live it down. We're here, we've signed the paperwork, we're doing it, Zane says. Besides, these girls are a mess. Margot just spent the last 30 minutes telling us about fishing boats and the mating habits of sea cucumbers, and the other one ran out of the bar crying. We can't get messed up with this right now. Zane is always the voice of reason, and he's rarely wrong, but I don't agree with him this time. Just give me another hour. I don't want to leave her out here alone. Something is going on with that guy at the bar. You're kidding, right? You're really going to hit on some vacation girl? I'm not hitting on her. I'm trying to help, I say, not actually sure what it is I'm doing. So go help her then, Zane bites, his stare steady on me. Just don't say anything about the TV show. We signed that confidentiality clause. We don't want to end up owing the TV network money. His fists are clenched and his jaw set, as though he's about to be way angrier about some paperwork than he needs to be. Trouble is, I don't know how to help him anymore. We're all still working through things, man, Colin says, throwing his hand up on Zane's shoulder.
but it's been 3 years. At some point, we have to be open to moving on. Marie wanted us to move on. Go ahead, Zane growls. Both of you, move the fuck on. But don't come crying to me when you find yourself in a huge fucking mess in the morning. This girl is bad fucking news. Anyone who's paying attention can see that. He looks down at his phone. I'll be in the hotel lobby at 4 a.m. Don't be late.
Colin looks toward me and gives me a comforting nod, as though he'll take care of Zane tonight. It's a job we've both taken on, though I'm not sure he notices. He's still too wrapped up in grief, which I completely understand. Hell, we all thought our life was set. We'd found each other, and that was all we needed. The guys and I had committed our lives to making Marie our priority. And she'll never leave my heart, but I can't sulk about it anymore. I spent the better part of 3 years in therapy. I've lost weekends to whiskey and bourbon, and I've spent endless hours talking to a woman that no longer exists, screaming out to her, begging her to come back. But none of it works. She's still gone, and I'm still here, trying to make sense of what's left of this life.
We'll see you tomorrow morning, man,
Colin says, following behind Zane, who's already walking up the sidewalk toward the resort. He mouths something I can't quite make out, but I assume it's something comforting or funny. He's usually trying to lighten the mood, but still, I don't know if it's right that I stay here with Sarah. If I don't go back with the guys, Zane is going to have a bone to pick with me, and I'm about to spend the next 30 days on a deserted island with him. The last thing I need is for him to be miserable on top of it. Besides, if I go with Sarah, I'm only confusing her and fooling myself into thinking I'm ready for anything more serious than friendship.
Hey,
Sarah says from behind me softly. Her small hand on my shoulder is light and sweet. I turn toward her, my heart still as her eyes reflect the bit of light from the bar.
Do you mind walking us back to our room? It's a really dark night, and who knows what could happen out here.
I nod, thankful she's made the decision for me. I'll walk her home, then call it a night. Simple.
Chapter 3. Sarah. I could walk myself and Margot back to the resort. We're only 100 feet away. But after seeing Kemp, I'm shaken as hell, and having a big, strong man at my side makes me feel safe. I'll see you in the morning, Margot, I say as we drop her off at her room. She slips inside, a sly look on her face as though she thinks she knows what's happening. For a second, I feel kind of bad. She was the one that wanted a fun night with a random stranger. Then I remember I'm not having fun with a hot rando stranger either. He's just walking me to my room. This is mine, I say, standing near the door at the end of the hallway next to a grouping of plumeria bushes. Brad leans against the side of the building, his tattoos moving as his biceps flex.
When do you two head home?
Tomorrow morning, I say, sliding my keycard into the door, my stomach a little nervous for what's definitely not happening next. He's lingering longer at my door than we did at Margot's, and the same feeling I always have at this point comes flooding back. My heart is pounding, my clit is throbbing, my hands are aching to reach out and touch him. Why do I have to be like this? Why can't I just let a nice guy drop me off and leave? I don't need his validation. I can comfort myself tonight. Seeing Kemp doesn't need to set me back. I've made so much progress in the last 2 weeks. I can keep going. The reasoning to lock my door and go to bed sounds good, but it slides in one ear and out the other as my lips begin to move. Do you want to come in? I mean, when do you take off? Maybe you're tired, or...
Technically, we leave here tomorrow morning, but we're just going to a barrier island for a few weeks.
I nod and slide one foot through the doorway. I'm an idiot. He obviously doesn't want to come in. You guys are living it up, I say. You must do well for yourselves. He shrugs. We do okay, but this is different.
Is this a thing I wouldn't believe?
He nods. Sort of, but it looks like you're letting all your air conditioning out. Do you want to talk inside?
Even his slight acceptance of me has my muscles shivering. God, I'm a mess.
I push the door open and step inside. Brad follows behind as excitement settles between my legs at the possibility of being touched, being held, being loved on, even if only for a few hours.
This is a pretty nice place, he says. You girls must have paid top dollar. What did you say you do again?
My face turns pink. There are a lot of things I do with a man on first blush. But telling him how broke I am and how I technically spent my last bit of money to come to Antigua, then spent the very, very last bit I had on a room upgrade, isn't one of them. I'm a nurse, I say, trying to avoid the subject altogether. Well, technically, I'm almost a college graduate. Well, I was almost a college graduate until I was doing an internship for a clinic. I turn away from him to sit on the edge of the bed and look out into the dark night, the truth sputtering from my lips like a girl I don't know. Why am I telling him this? I don't think it's going to work out. Nursing, I mean.
Why do you say that?
He asks, joining me at the edge of the mattress. For a second, I get a vibe that he actually cares. This isn't all some dance to get me naked. I should tell him he doesn't have to try this hard.
You seem like you'd be good at helping people.
I'm tempted to tell him every dirty detail, spill my story for him to soak up and make me better. Another trait I blame my mother for. If a man couldn't fix her problems, they weren't meant to be fixed. It's her motto, and one I always told myself I'd avoid at all costs. Yet here I am, repeating all her mistakes. I'm not as good at helping people as you'd think, I say, forcing myself to keep the conversation light. I'm actually really bad at it.
How so? It looks like Margot counts on you quite a bit.
I smile, stand from the bed, and move in front of the window. Margot and I have been friends forever. She doesn't know any better. Believe me, I'm toxic.
Ah,
he says, standing from the bed to meet me at my side.
What is it? Absent mother? Father? Are they on drugs or alcoholics? For me, it was my dad that was the deadbeat. He left when I was a kid.
I turn towards him, sort of shocked that he's guessed my situation before knowing more about me. And for a second, I feel my heart expand as though it wants me to open up. Brad has these big, dark eyes that emit some kind of care I've never seen before.
Go ahead, he says again, his hand on my shoulder. It's okay.
I look away, then back again, my breath catching before I speak. My mom. Right now, it's a new boyfriend. Whenever she gets a new one, the world changes. Everything becomes about him and what he wants. This one doesn't give two fucks if I don't have a job or a place to live. He wants me out, which would be fine if I had more than a few $100 in my bank account. My stomach clenches with embarrassment. I didn't want to spend the last of my money on this trip, but I needed out of California fast, and I don't know, the whole thing is kind of humiliating.
Man, that's tough,
Brad says, his eyes soft with concern.
You have a plan for when you get back?
I shrug. Just taking it a day at a time. Rent is crazy expensive. Everyone I know is in no place for house guests, and school is a distant memory. Honestly, I just want to forget about it all tonight and pretend like I'm a rich person who can afford this nice room at this fancy resort.
I get it, he says,
wandering toward me as though he sees how desperate I am for him to go along with my plan.
So, what would a rich person do on their last night of vacation?
I smile and look toward him, watching as his muscles flex beneath his t-shirt. He's handsome as hell and super...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?